Jaya Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Parivrajakacharya Asatara Satashri Srimadasavang Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Nam Acharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Kiri Govardhan Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai. Mathura Dham Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dham Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Devi. Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesa Sunyavani Paskachade Satarane. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Parakamalam. Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. It's June 1st, 2011, Hilo Skype class in Hawaii. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 10, Departure of Lord Krishna for Dwarka. Text 4. Kamam Vavarsha Parjanya Sarva Kama Dugamahi Shishichu Smavra Jangava Payaso Dvasvatir Muda. Please chant. Kamam. Everything needed. Vavarsha. Was showered. Parjanya. Rains. Sarva.
Sarva.
Everything.
Everything.
Kama. Necessities. Duga.
Duga.
Producer.
Duga.
Mahi.
Mahi.
The land.
The land.
Sisi Chuhu
Sma.
Sisi Chuhu Sma. Moisen.
Moisen.
Rajan.
Rajan.
Pasturing grounds.
Pasturing grounds.
Gavaha. The cow.
The cow.
Payasa Udhashvati.
Payasa Udhashvati.
Due to swollen milk bags.
Due to swollen milk bags.
Muda.
Muda.
Because of a joyful attitude. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the cloud showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. So if we look, before we go on to the purport, Prabhupada spoke several times on this verse. Just take a look at the Sanskrit
You'll see that there is a word here twice, and that is kama. A kama normally means, we normally translate it as lust, but it also means whatever you want, all your desires. Prabhupada translates here once as everything needed, and again as necessities. So everything needed. When Maharaj Yudhisthira was king, people had everything needed. And there's two examples given here. One is the rains. Vavarsha parjanya, the rains were showered. And then, actually three examples. Rains were showered. The land, mahi, produced everything. Dugda mahi, the land produced everything. And the cows were so happy, muda, they were so happy that they were pouring out milk even without being milked. They were wetting the ground. So these are three symptoms given here that everything was given. Sarvakama. Not just bare necessities, but as we'll see as we go through the purport, everything that one could possibly want is there in the reign of a king like Yudhisthira. Okay, let's go to Prabhupada's purport. The basic principle of economic development is centered on land and cows. Now, of course, Prabhupada's saying this because we have, of the three examples given, rain, land, and cows, two of them are land and cows. The necessities of human society are food grains, fruits, milk, minerals, clothing, wood, etc. One requires all these items to fulfill the material needs of the body. Certainly one does not require flesh and fish or iron tools and machinery. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, all over the world there were regulated rainfalls. Rainfalls are not in the control of the human being. The heavenly king Indradev is the controller of rains, and he is the servant of the Lord. When the Lord is obeyed by the king and the people under the king's administration, there are regulated rains on the horizon, and these rains are the cause of all varieties of production on the land. Not only do regulated rains help ample production of grains and fruits, but when they combine with astronomical influences, there is ample production of valuable stones and pearls. That's an interesting statement, that when rains happen at certain astrological time, stones and valuable stones and pearls are produced. Grains and vegetables can sumptuously feed a man and animals, and a fatty cow delivers enough milk to supply a man sumptuously with vigor and vitality. If there is enough milk, enough grains, enough fruit, enough cotton, enough silk, and enough jewels, then why do the people need cinemas, houses of prostitution, slaughterhouses, etc.? What is the need of an artificial luxurious life of cinema, cars, radio, flesh, and hotels? When Prabhupada says hotels, he's often referring to restaurants, not just places to sleep. Has this civilization produced anything but quarreling individually and nationally? Has this civilization enhanced the cause of equality and fraternity by sending thousands of men into a hellish factory and the war fields at the whims of a particular man? It is said here that the cows used to moisten the pasturing land with milk because their milk bags were fatty and the animals were joyful. Do they not require, therefore, proper protection for a joyful life by being fed with a sufficient quantity of grass in the field? Why should men kill cows for their selfish purposes? Why should men not be satisfied with grains, fruit, and milk, which combined together can produce hundreds and thousands of palatable dishes? Why are there slaughterhouses all over the world to kill innocent animals? Maharaj Parikshit, grandson of Maharaj Yudhisthira, while touring his vast kingdom, saw a black man attempting to kill a cow. The king at once arrested the butcher and chastised him sufficiently. Should not a king or executive head protect the lives of the poor animals who are unable to defend themselves? Is this humanity? Are not the animals of a country citizens also? Then why are they allowed to be butchered in organized slaughterhouses? Are these the signs of equality, fraternity, and nonviolence? Therefore, in contrast with the modern, advanced, civilized form of government, an autocracy like Maharaj Yudhisthira's is by far superior to a so-called democracy in which animals are killed and a man less than an animal is allowed to cast votes for another less than animal man. We are all creatures of material nature. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is said that the Lord himself is the seed-giving father, and material nature is the mother of all living beings in all shapes. Thus, Mother Material Nature has enough foodstuff, both for animals and for men, by the grace of the Father Almighty, Sri Krishna. The human being is the elder brother of all other living beings. He is endowed with intelligence more powerful than animals, for realizing the course of nature and the indications of the Almighty Father. Human civilization should depend on the production of material nature, without artificially attempting economic development, to turn the world into a chaos of artificial greed and power, only for the purpose of artificial luxuries and sense gratification. This is but the life of dogs and hogs. Kamam vavarsha parjanya sarva kamam duga mahi shishi chus ma vrjangava payasod vasvatir muda. During the reign of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the cloud showered all the water that people needed, and the earth produced all the necessities of man in profusion. Due to its fatty milk bag and cheerful attitude, the cow used to moisten the grazing ground with milk. So Krishna is the supplier of everything. Aham Bija Pratapita, as Prabhupada calls him several times here, the Almighty Father. Even an ordinary material father with so many faults makes sure that his children eat. Right? We expect that even some not very elevated father, even if a man is not educated, even if he's just likes to drink beer and watch the football game, not very high class person, still he makes sure his children have food, makes sure that his children has clothing, makes sure that his children go to school, makes sure they have some toys in the house, that they have some friends to play with, that they go to sporting activities. So even a very ordinary person, even a low-class ordinary person, takes care of the needs of his children. We're astonished if we read about some parent who neglects his children. We're amazed. We're flabbergasted. How can a parent neglect his children? Even the disobedient children. So I'm here now with my son and his wife, and they have 8 children. And sometimes some of the children are disobedient, and there's one of the children she's almost 6, she's regularly disobedient. She's always looking for ways to get around the rules. I'm hoping someday she'll become an inventor or something. But anyway, she's a very naughty child. But still, they make sure that she has food and clothing and toys and an education and friends and affection. It's not that because she's a naughty child, they don't give her any affection. And they're always trying to train her. So what to speak of Krishna? How many millions and billions, unlimited times, more affectionate is Krishna to his children? They were his parts and parcels. Mamai vamso jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana. We're always his parts and parcels. We're part of him. Why did the parents take such good care of the children? Because the children are part of them. The child is part of the mother's body and the father's body. And just like a person feeds themselves, they feed their children. And the parents want, again, all but the most abominable parents, they not only want to provide for their children, they would like to provide abundantly, as whatever is within their means. If parents have the means, then they make sure their children are given profuse, as Prabhupada says here. Supply the necessities of man in profusion. Sarvakama, whatever they need. Now, of course, good parents don't spoil their children. It's not that whatever the children ask for, the parents immediately give. Just like one of my grandchildren here, she's 9 years old, she said, I want to start cooking. So my son has started her with making salad dressing. So now she made twice, once with my son and once with my daughter-in-law. And my son has now put her on the schedule for making breakfast on Sunday. So I was talking to her about how Krishna fulfills all desires. Eko bahanam yo vidadati kama. One of the verses Prabhupada quotes when lecturing on this verse, today's verse. And I said to her, so we will get everything that we want even, but Krishna may not give it immediately. I said, like if you say you want to cook, will your parents immediately just say, now go in the kitchen and make lunch? She laughed. She said, no. I said, why not? Because then you might burn yourself or cut yourself. So they're going to train you little by little, step by step, give you the proper training, give you the proper facility. So Krishna is also like that. But Krishna is giving us whatever we need, and not just what we need in a bare bones way. And I've spoken about this before, but we this material world, where are the criminals? Where are the rebellious souls? And here on the Earth planet, frankly, this is not a very high planet. This is a lower middle planet. We're a lower middle class of the universe. We're not in a very elevated position. And it's the Kali Yuga, when the souls who are barely qualified to be humans are allowed to take birth as human beings. And still, what do we have? Prabhupada talks about here cotton, silk, jewels. That's here. You can go and buy cotton cloth, silk cloth, and jewels. Those are not just the bare necessities. What do you give, the criminals? We must be at least in a medium security prison here on the lower middle planet in Kali Yuga. We're not in the maximum security of the hellish planets or the minimum security of the heavenly planets. I once got some letters from an inmate because of my Bhakti Godhead articles. They were really disturbing letters, and I finally contacted someone at the prison where he was staying, and I found out that this inmate was in the maximum security prison for the criminally insane. So we're not quite at that level. Right? But still, look what Krishna's giving us. He's giving us just bare necessities of life would mean what? Just one kind of grain, one kind of fruit, one kind of vegetable, just clothes to cover ourselves. I know what we see the animals get. And the animals get, they really just get the bare necessities. Just exactly what they need to live. And they have to spend all of their time looking for food, taking care of shelter, defending themselves. But what do we get as human beings? And just think of how many varieties of grains there are. Wheat, rice, barley, millet, amaranth, so on and on. And then varieties of the varieties. We grind our own wheat here. We have soft wheat and hard wheat. The other day my son made some biscuits with hard wheat. They were so good. We said, how are they so good? He said, oh, the hard wheat has more flavor than the soft wheat. I was thinking two different kinds of wheat, very different flavor. So many different kinds of tomatoes. So many different kinds of broccoli, of mangoes. So many varieties of fruits and so many varieties of the varieties. I want to speak, Prabhupada talks here about silk and jewels. Nobody needs silk and jewels to live. Who needs jewels to live? But Krishna's providing jewels. Amazing. Krishna's providing flowers. Now, just for plants to reproduce, you don't have to have such fragrant flowers as gardenias and tuberose and honeysuckle. Such a variety and nuances of fragrance, of color, of shape and form. The beauty of a rose, the beauty of a lotus, the beauty of a gardenia. And they're all different. Such variety. This is the kindness of Krishna. And this is the kindness of Krishna right now, when there's hardly any yajna being performed on the earth, and where the leaders of our society are primarily, as Prabhupada says here, man-animals. Less than animal, he says. Men who are less than animals. So all over the world, the leaders are generally, I'm not saying everybody, but generally, they are humans that are less than animals. Why less than animals? Because animals stay to their prescribed food, their prescribed home. Whereas these people, they are eating non-vegetarian food, which is not the prescribed food for human beings. We don't have the teeth, we don't have the digestive system, the length of intestines, the saliva. If you said to human beings, okay, go kill your animal food using no tools, just your hands and teeth, how many of us could kill anything? We have to get some unfair advantage, like you keep the chicken in a pen. You know, just wild chicken, chasing the chicken and catching it and killing it without a tool. Very difficult. But you could easily eat fruit and vegetables and milk without anything extraneous other than what we have in the body. So therefore, less than animal men. So if Krishna is providing such profusion, such variety, when the earth is full of less than animal people, so many sinful activities are taking place on the earth right now. To the point of women killing their own children. Even in the animal kingdom, there's not very many animals that kill their own children. Maybe guppies. I think a few kinds of snakes. Yeah. And why are the modern women killing their children? For the sake of, to relieve their embarrassment or to facilitate their career or something like that. And still such profusion. So just imagine if the earth is full of pious persons and run by pious kings. Therefore, our Krishna conscious society is not proposing only spiritual life. That's not our proposal. We don't say that the goal of life is everyone should just eat soup and bread without salt, wear a hair shirt, put peas in your shoes, and just pray all day, living a life of austerity and privation. That's not our philosophy. Now, during the Middle Ages, when the Catholic Church was running Europe, they had this concept that to be a spiritual person, to be a religious person, meant that materially your life should be falling apart. And sometimes even devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement think like that. That if you're a devotee, the material side of your life should be terrible. You don't take care of the material side of your life. What to speak of taking care of the material side of others? And they use Srila Prabhupada's quotes about mundane welfare work to justify thinking that we should have a life where there's no care of the material necessities. But here in this example, we see that the leaders of a Krishna conscious society act as true representatives of Krishna, who is the Supreme Father. The leaders of a Krishna conscious society also act like the mother and father of the society. And when they do so, then Mother Nature is happy to supply. In one of the lectures Prabhupada gave on this verse, he says that Krishna is willing to supply, but when people are sinful, Mother Nature refuses. I was thinking, that's very funny. Like the mother is the disciplinarian, the father is soft-hearted. Yes, yes, we can give everything to the children. And the mother says, no, they're misbehaving. Put them in the corner. No dessert for them. Only the basic meal. I want to just take a minute here to look at Varnashram and look at the roles of the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras. Because in this verse in purport, what we're hearing, is what happens when a real Kshatriya, a Vaishnav Kshatriya, who we also call a Raja Rishi, Raja is king, Rishi is a sage. Raja also means a mode of passion. But yet, Raja Rishi, someone who's a king, who's using the mode of passion, but who's a Rishi, who himself is controlled by goodness or above. So let's look at the roles. I think if we look at the roles of the Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, that we can understand not only what we would want for society in general, but what we would need for ISKCON. many, many years ago, I was in a Bhagavatam class with a similar verse or purport about an ideal society. And the devotee giving the class said, how can we, as Hare Krishna devotees, propound such a vision for society in general when we can't even have such a functioning model in our own mini society? He said, if we can't run a dollhouse, how are we going to run a state? So, of course, there's much discussion, especially at the leadership level, as to what ISKCON is. I'm going to use ISKCON as an example because I've been a member of ISKCON my whole Krishna conscious life, but the same discussion could be there for other societies of devotees. Gradually, other societies of devotees are forming on the earth. So in the word ISKCON, we have International Society for Krishna Consciousness, not International Monasteries for Krishna Consciousness, not International Confederation of Temples for Krishna Consciousness, but International Society. So a society must have these divisions. So therefore, what we're looking at here is pertinent not only for America and Slovenia and Belgium and Brazil and India, or even a city, but it's also pertinent for a society of devotees. So the role of brahmanas are teachers, priests, doctors, other than surgeons, and counselors. That's their role in society. They're giving guidance. They're giving help. The role of the kshatriyas are as government officials, as soldiers, and Prabhupada also says as landlords. The role of the Vaishyas as farmers, traders, and business persons, and the role of the Shudras as workers and artisans. And what kind of wealth do they have? The Brahmanas are interested in very simple basic necessities. Very, very simple. So the Brahmanas, even if luxuries are available in the society, they're not particularly interested in making use of them for their personal life. The Kshatriyas are interested in having a life full of great opulence, silks and jewels, wearing clothes one time and then giving them away and so forth. The Vaishyas are interested also in a high level of wealth, maybe not quite as high as Kshatriyas, but quite high. And the wealth for the Shudras, Prabhupada said, should be mostly in goods rather than money. But the Shudras certainly want enough so that they can feel peaceful. Now, what do they protect? Prabhupada's talking a lot in this purport about protection. The Brahmanas protect knowledge. The Brahmanas make sure that the knowledge in society is, first of all, real knowledge, not phony knowledge. It's got to be the real deal, not I think, I guess, maybe, I believe. We have this theory, but actual knowledge. And the Brahmins also make sure that knowledge is used properly, that real knowledge is not used in a harmful way, that it's used by the right person. Therefore, knowledge is passed from guru to disciple. That one gives knowledge to someone who's submissive, who renders service, who asks pertinent questions, not just that you give all knowledge to everyone. The Brahmanas protect people. The Brahmanas are primarily supposed to care for the citizens. Now, the Brahmanas are also caring for the Kshatriyas. The Brahmanas are using their knowledge to guide the Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas make sure that people have everything they want. Sarvakam, and we read in this verse, everything they could want. Enough food, enough clothing. Prabhupada talks here about not having cinemas. But the Kshatriyas also provided for the people's entertainment. They sponsored the arts. They would sponsor people for drama, for dance, for painting, for music, and make sure that people in general also had access to entertainment. The Kshatriyas made sure that people had parks and gardens for recreation, that they had pure water, that they had good roads. The Kshatriyas paid the Brahmanas in charity, so the Brahmanas could provide free education. The Kshatriyas gave charity to the Brahmana doctors so that they could provide free medical care. The Kshatriyas made sure that all of the material necessities, as Prabhupada says here, were taken care of. And the Kshatriyas oversaw the Vaishyas, to make sure that the Vaishyas properly protected their area. The Vaishyas protect the natural resources and the animals. So that's what's also talked about in this verse. Mahi, the land, and Gavaha, the cows. So the Vaishyas were to protect, make sure that the natural resources were not exploited, make sure that the land was fertilized with natural chemicals, the waters were kept pure, the air was kept pure, the animals were properly cared for. And the Kshatriyas passed laws and oversaw this, so that the Vaishyas did this, and the Brahmanas were keeping track of the Kshatriyas, so they would do this. And then the Shudras were to protect the arts and crafts and skills, to make sure that the skills and crafts were maintained generation after generation and not lost. Prabhupada here is denigrating the factories. In the factories, there's no more arts and skills. Everything's done by a machine on an assembly line. No worker can look at the final product with pride. The Shudras are to protect this pride of craftsmanship, the pride of service, the pride of the arts, and make sure, that, again, that they stay in a pristine form without exploitation, so that workers are not exploited, so that they have some sense of personal accomplishment. And what does each person produce? So the Brahmanas produce the wisdom and guidance for society, which is the ultimate wealth. The Kshatriyas produce peace, order, and care. If you have a proper Kshatriya, there's peace, there's the rules of order. Just like we see there, sometimes we visit countries where the governments are not very strong. And then we'll see the cars are driving on both sides of the road. There's no order. Even sometimes I've seen cars driving the wrong way. There's no order. And the Kshatriyas also, they produce care for the citizens. Educational care, medical care, old age care, care for widows and orphans. The Vaishyas produce honest natural wealth, not speculative stocks. They produce wealth that's coming from the land, mostly from the land, Mahi Gavaha. They're from the land and from the cows. And also from the water. The pearls, Prabhupada mentions in this purport, are coming from the water. Natural, honest wealth produced by honest means, right, while protecting the natural resources. And the Shudras produce services and entertainment. Now, again, all of these can be done in Krishna consciousness, Krishna conscious wisdom, Krishna conscious honest wealth, recognizing Krishna as the Supreme Father, Krishna conscious entertainment, Krishna conscious care. What is their interest? What's a motivator for each of these groups? The Brahmanas are motivated by truth with a capital T, ultimate truth, liberation, God. That's what's motivating the Brahmanas. A Brahmana will give up material ethics, will give up wealth, and will give up pleasure for the sake of finding the absolute truth. The Kshatriyas are motivated by dharma, by morality and ethics, by small t truthfulness, not telling lies. That's what motivates the Kshatriyas. Kshatriya, to keep his word of honor, to do what is ethical, to do what is moral, will sacrifice his money, will sacrifice his pleasure, and unfortunately will even sacrifice transcendence. We see this in the case of Karna, where when Krishna asks Karna to join the Pandavas, Karna says, I know that you are God. I know that you are the truth. I know that you will win, but I have to keep my promise to Duryodhana. I can't give up my ethics. I can't give up my morality. And Bhishma and Dronacharya, although they're pure Vaishnavas, exemplifying this fault of the Kshatriyas, they fought on the side of Duryodhana. That Bhishma's thinking, Duryodhana has maintained me. I'm ethically obligated to him. So the Kshatriyas choose ordinary morality over transcendence, wealth, and pleasure. Then they'll give up their wealth to keep their word. Harishchandra, Rantidev, they'll give up their pleasure, Maharaj Shivi. And the Vaishyas will give up everything for wealth. So what motivates the Vaishyas is wealth. They will abandon transcendence, they will abandon ethics and morality, and they will abandon also pleasures for the sake of amassing wealth. A Vaishya will work 80, 100 hours a week, no time to enjoy their wealth, to amass wealth. And the Shudra's main interest is in pleasure, immediate pleasure. So the Shudras will give up transcendence, ethics, and wealth for the sake of pleasure. And we see that the Brahmanas, they can have a problem with pride. Oh, we're better than everyone else. Sometimes we also see the Brahmanas have problems with anger. The Kshatriyas really have to deal with their anger because they're very much motivated by the mode of passion. The Vaishyas have to control their greed, and the Shudras have to control their lust. Of course, all these apply to everyone. Now, in a Krishna-conscious society, we need all four of these. There's no question that we cannot have these four. We need all of these four as Vaishnavas, as Krishna-conscious persons. We need persons acting as Brahmanas, who are going to be independent enough that they can protect knowledge. Because the Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and the Shudras are willing to sacrifice transcendence for other things, they cannot have any power over the Brahmanas. As soon as a Brahmana is being maintained by a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Shudra, which is the case with the modern so-called Brahmanas, they cannot protect truth and they cannot produce wisdom. They're just not able to do it. They become compromised by these bodily necessities. So the Brahmanas have to have independent wealth. Now I see that in our Krishna conscious society, we often object to Brahmanas having independent sources of wealth. But there must be. There must be. Brahmanas have to live on charity. Charity freely given. And the sacrifice that the Brahmins make for that is that they have no idea how much money they're going to get when. They don't know what they're getting when. There's no fixed income for a Brahmana. A Brahmin is living at the mercy of God and the mercy of whatever God sends. That's the sacrifice that a Brahmin makes in order to have that kind of independence. And it's not a small sacrifice, especially for a Brahmin grihastha, to live without knowing how much money am I going to get, what facility am I going to get. And the Brahmin is a person, they're not concerned about that. They're more concerned with transcendence than with honor or with wealth or with pleasures. And they want to depend on Krishna. And they have to be allowed to do that. As soon as a Brahmana is not doing that, then they cannot perform it properly in their function. Then we have to have Kshatriyas. Maybe let's go to the Kshatriyas last. Let's go next, because the main thrust of this verse is the Kshatriyas. So we have to have Vaishyas. We have to have people who are producing honest wealth. You can't run a society without wealth, and the Vaishyas are the only ones who are producing wealth. The Kshatriyas are collecting wealth and redistributing it, but they don't produce it. In one sense, you could say that the Shudras also may produce some wealth in the form of goods, but the goods that the Shudras produce come from the wealth that the Vaishyas have produced. The Shudras are producing things out of metal and clay and cloth, but all those goods have come from the Vaishyas. So if the Vaishyas aren't producing wealth, everything's going to fall apart. It's like if you don't have food, the Vaishyas are the stomach. So to produce wealth that's in a Krishna-conscious way, honoring the way Krishna wants to do it. Prabhupada says, what is the need of artificial, luxurious life of cinemas, cars, radios, flesh, and hotels? So the Vaishyas want to produce luxuries, yes, but to produce natural luxuries. That doesn't mean primitive. In Dwarka, in Hastinapur, they were not living like tribals in the woods. Sometimes devotees think that a Krishna-conscious society means everyone's living like some rishi in the forest. There were rishis in the forest, but even the Brahmanas in a village were not living like that, the Brahmin householders. What to speak of the rest of society? The Brahmins are the smallest portion of the society. The Kshatriyas, the Vaishyas, and the Shudras, they were all living nicely.
Where's my towel?
Oh!
Hold on one second. It's open. Karika, it's open. And the step stool's there. Or you can just ask someone to get it for you. Just pull it open a little bit. Okay, ask one of the big kids. Go ask one of the big kids to get it for you.
No, I can't.
Sorry. I had a problem here. So we then go to the Shudras. There's one temple that I visited over the years where there's wonderful Bhagavatam classes. Everyone is studying Prabhupada's books, but the walls are peeling and the plumbing is falling apart. And whenever I go there, I say, you guys need to get some Shudras. The Shudras are meant to provide pious pleasures, beautiful melodic music glorifying the Lord. I was just reading where Prabhupada was talking about producing beautiful music to attract the people in general, wonderful paintings in our Radhadesh and also in Villa Vrindavan. We have many original oil paintings done by devotee artists. Dancing, drama. Srila Prabhupada so much loved Krishna conscious drama. Of course, he himself, when he was young, acted in drama. And not only the entertainment, but the goods we use. We took the kids out on a field trip to see some Native American crafts, how they made their water jugs out of gourds and clay. So instead of using these plastic milk jugs, you have a metal, or you have clay, or you have even something made out of a dried squash. So to produce these goods in a way that respects the earth, that respects Krishna, that glorifies Krishna. Now, what I've seen so far in our development of a Krishna-conscious society is that, and I teach ISKCON history, is that in the beginning of ISKCON, hold on one more second, can you get quite this towel out of the dryer, please? In the beginning of ISKCON, we understood that we needed brahmanas and that we needed shudras. And we understood that people functioning in both capacities could be Vaishnavas and were necessary for a society. From the very beginning of ISKCON, nobody thought, oh, the people taking out the trash and the people painting the pictures for the BBT and the people doing the dramas, that they're lesser devotees than the people doing the Sanskrit work for Prabhupada's books. Nobody thought like that. I mean, we had some mentality for a while that the book distributors were better than the pujaris, and the sannyasis were better than the grihasthas. But we certainly didn't have a view that the people providing the services and creating the goods and providing the entertainment were any less Vaishnavas, were any less Krishna conscious, were any less likely to go back to Godhead than the people working on the Sanskrit scholarship or giving the Bhagavatam class or addressing the deities. We used to think, though, that the Vaishyas and the Kshatriyas were some sort of a lower status. Gradually, as our movement changed, as we became less of an ashram-based movement, as we became more of a congregational-based movement, which started in the 80s and really exploded in the 90s, and as consequently the army of book distributors that were maintaining the temples and living in the ashrams decreased, and as our building of magnificent temples and projects increased, we started saying that we needed people who were going to be producing wealth. And we started recognizing that people who had an inclination to produce wealth could also be devotees, that they had a place in the Krishna-conscious society. But the one area that we've not yet seen is that of the Kshatriyas. So those who have a Kshatriya mentality, they haven't yet, except maybe in a few places, really been seen as part of our Krishna-conscious society. But without the Kshatriyas, there's simply not going to be a society. There may be all kinds of things, but there won't be a society. Without the Kshatriyas, the problems that we will see are the realm of the Kshatriyas, which are care of people. Therefore, we see a lack of facilities for devotees when they get old. We see a lack of schools. There's maybe 15 schools for children all over the world, and most of them are in India. Now, in all of North America, there's only 4 schools for devotee children. So we see a lack of medical care, we see a lack of educational care, we see just a general lack of infrastructure. We don't see very many developments of villages. So caring. I was teaching a Bhagavad Gita class the other day, and we were talking about Arjuna's 4 reasons for not wanting to fight. And one of them was compassion. So my 2 older grandsons said, compassion? But Arjuna's a kshatriya. He's a fighter. Why would he have any compassion? And I said, no, you don't understand what a kshatriya does most of the time. Kshatriya is not spending most of their time on the battlefield. They're spending most of their time taking care of people and taking care of people's material needs, as Prabhupada says here. The material needs. The brahmanas were taking care of people's spiritual needs, and the kshatriyas took care of people's spiritual needs by facilitating the brahmanas and by being guided by the brahmanas. But the job of the kshatriyas was taking care of people's material needs, making sure people had housing and food and water and clothing and parks and entertainment and medical and everything. And the other thing that we find some gap in is the other interest of the kshatriyas, which is morality and ethics. Kshatriyas are interested in dharma. So this also we see a lack. The brahmanas are interested in transcendence. If you just have brahmanas leading everything, then let's forgive this, let's do that, as long as people are chanting Hare Krishna. There's not really justice and law and order, and the people become disturbed that ethics isn't being followed. Of course, the kshatriyas being under the brahmanas are not going to have a society simply of material ethics. So this is our blueprint. We are not interested simply in creating a group of people who live separate from the world, out in the forest, in a little hut, picking some roots and berries, wearing one piece of cloth and chanting all day. There may be people like that, but those people are part of a greater society. It is the international society for Krishna consciousness Prabhupada wanted to have. And Krishna wants, you see here in Bhagavatam, that's what Krishna wants. Krishna wants it so much that he had the battle of Kurukshetra, where so many people died, so much difficulty, just to create this kind of a society. So for us, on an individual level, we can work at understanding the place of the kshatriyas, which is our big missing piece. How can we encourage people who have a kshatriya mentality? What I see now is that those who have a kshatriya mentality, either they do something independent, which is often criticized as social welfare, or they try to artificially act like a brahmana or a vaishya, generally as a vaishya. But they're not very satisfied. And because the kshatriyas have a fighting nature, and because they're very interested in taking care of people and very interested in ethics and justice, when these people are not properly situated, they tend to cause a lot of friction and problem in the society. My guess is that a lot of the people who are pushing for more justice and ethics and criticizing leadership and pushing for care of the devotees and fighting about it, at least with their words, are probably misengaged kshatriyas, because Krishna says twice in the Gita that either you have to use your nature for him or you will use it for Maya. So instead they end up fighting with the devotees instead of fighting against the demons. But on a more personal level, that's on a societal level. I've been speaking mostly about society because this verse in purport is mostly about society, or wholly about society. But I think we can also look at this verse much more on a personal level. That even if the society is crazy, even if society in general, whatever country you live in, whether you live in Peru or America or Nepal or Australia, even if your society is run by a less than animal person, even if there's no Maharaj Yudhisthira, even if the material necessities of life are coming in the form of plastics and pollution-driven agriculture, still Krishna will take care of us. Even if in our devotee society we've not yet activated and encouraged our kshatriyas so that we don't yet have a society, Krishna takes care of us. He's really taking care of us. He's taking care of everything we need. Masucha, we don't need to worry. We don't need to have any fear. We don't need to have any anxiety. Our only anxiety is how to please Krishna, how to please Guru. That should be our only anxiety. We don't need to have anxieties for the material necessities of life. You must say, well, how will I get the material necessities of life? If we act in our nature to serve Krishna, because our nature will include one of these four varnas, the material necessities of life will come as a result of our work. But not exactly as a result of our work, because we're doing our work to please Krishna. Yagya tar karmano natra aloko yam karma bandana tara tar kamakantaya mukta sangha samacha. Because we're doing our work to please Krishna. Krishna is our boss. He's the one giving us our salary. We'll be a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, a husband, a wife, a mother, a father, a student, a retired person, a renunciate, to make Krishna happy. Not for our own sense gratification. We're using that nature, the nature that we got because of our previous desires for a particular taste of sense gratification. But we're using that to please Krishna. And Krishna's supplying our salary. Of course, the ultimate salary he's giving us is not in the clothes that we have and the food that we eat. And I'm going to assume that everyone listening to this class has more clothes than they absolutely need to live, nicer food than they absolutely need for maintenance of their body and their health. I'm guessing that everybody listening has many, many more times what they need just for bare living. But that's not the ultimate salary Krishna is giving us. Dasakori Beta Mori Deha Premadana. The ultimate salary that Krishna is going to give us is Krishna is going to give us himself and love. A loving service. Yad Baba Bhavi Tadio Manajastitaiva Samprabhi Rupa Mahima Sanyana Bhusha Suktarya Meva Nigama Petitais Tivanti Govinda Manipurusham Tamaham Bhajami. Krishna is going to give us our real wealth, our eternal body, our eternal service, our eternal relationship with him. And in the meantime, in this world of illusion, in this world of names, in this temporary tukalayam ashashvatam, he will give us whatever we need for a happy life. So with that faith, with that conviction, we can put our anxiety and our energy into our devotional service, rather than our anxiety and our energy into the material side of things, which, if our devotional service is proper, and by devotional service I include what we're doing according to our nature in Krishna's service, then everything that we need will be provided. It may not be provided exactly in the way we want or when we want or how we want, but that is because we are foolish. But it will be provided in the proper time, in the proper place, and beyond. Sarva kaman, it says here. Sarva kaman, beyond what we can imagine. We'll be asking for glass, broken glass, and Krishna will give us diamonds. So a little time here for questions and comments. Questions, so, comments.
Prabhu, until you actually like to speak or ask a question, if you could still remain muted. But anybody that has a question or comments, please go ahead.
Any questions? Any comments?
Well, Mother Irma, I have a question, but I was waiting for someone else to say something first, since I asked a lot. Anything else, Prabhu, from anyone? All right, then I'm going to go ahead and ask a question. What I will need to do is to refer to the previous verse that we read yesterday, in the second paragraph, about in the middle. If you don't mind, in order for me to ask this question, I need to read. There's about six sentences here.
Okay.
So, right. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada says, it is instructed in the Shastras that one should follow the great authority, the infallible Lord, without any personal motive or manufactured ideology. Therefore, it is possible for Maharaj Yudhisthira to rule the whole world, including the seas, because the principles were infallible and universally applicable to be acceptable to everyone. Only the perfect and infallible can create a program which is applicable at every place and can be followed by all in the world. It is the person who rules and not the impersonal government. If a person is perfect, the government is perfect. So, it's not that I wasn't closely trying to pay attention to very elaborate description of the Varnashram system. Let me ask it this way. When Srila Prabhupada is stating here that the principles will be acceptable by everyone if the person who is the head of the government is perfect, it's hard for me to imagine how that would take place, because we see in this world how it's so fragmented. Everybody has got their own idea about how things should be done, and there's no trust. So even if you had a very powerful person at the head of a government, how would people be satisfied to follow that person as his ideology is supreme?
Okay, well, even in the time of Maharaj Yudhisthira, there were people who didn't like him. Otherwise, there would have been no battle of Kurukshetra. So I understand that Prabhupada's making these as general statements, not absolute statements. When we talk about everybody, create an ideology acceptable to everyone. It wasn't acceptable to everyone. Otherwise, Jarasandhar wouldn't have had to be killed. Duryodhan wouldn't have to be killed. It wouldn't have been a war. On the other side, the Vedic scriptures provide a place for everyone, unlike the Jewish, Christian, and Muslim, Buddhist scriptures. There are parts of the Vedas for those in the modes of ignorance. There are parts of the Vedas for those in the mode of passion. You can be under the Vedic authority and have a wide variety of ways of living, modes of worship, etc. So the Vedic view of life is very broad and very inclusive. It is not, as Prabhupada often says, it's not narrow or stereotyped. So it certainly has a place and facility for everyone.
I think we could say
that if things are governed by the Vedas, and if the Kshatriyas are Rajarishis and Vaishnavas, that the amount of trouble will be small. But, you know, sometimes the demons attack Indra. Sometimes even attack Lord Brahma. What to speak of an earthly king, there's going to be attack by demons. Honestly, all conditioned souls have rebelled against and hated the perfect plan of the Lord. Right? Why is there a material world? So the spiritual world is a place that perfectly fulfills the desires of everyone, with only one caveat. Krishna's the center, not you. And there's some souls who say, I'm not going to do that. I want to be the center. They're just satisfied. Why should Krishna be the transcendental autocrat? So we should expect that within the material world, there's going to be souls who have more or less of that mood, and those who have more of that mood will resist any kind of government that, again, puts Krishna at the center. even though that kind of government, where Krishna is at the center, provides for peace and prosperity for everyone far beyond and in a much more pleasing way without some cost of destroying the environment than a government that doesn't have Krishna at the center. I'm not sure exactly what you're asking beyond what we've already discussed.
It's okay.
Okay.
I'll let it rest.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes.
And Paul McCartney, he's behind this animal rights movement. And, you know, he makes pretty bold statements. One of them on the wall in one of the health food stores here, he says, if you want to change the world, stop eating meat.
Mm.
And I was looking for the direct quote, and I found a YouTube video, a very short video, where he's addressing the English Parliament, and he's just reading off of a UN study that they found that the slaughterhouse industry is one of the biggest polluters, and they're wasting resources like anything, and it's just a horrible situation, and he's just reading off this stuff, and the title of it is Save the Planet, Stop Eating Meat, says Paul McCartney, and the comments, if you see this YouTube video, it's only been viewed 163 times, and there's outrageous, horrible, horrible people writing stuff, you know, just ripping him for even mentioning not eating meat. So this is the world we live in. And probably the most powerful thing you can do to change the world is to become a vegetarian, short of becoming a devotee. So, you know, I mean, somebody may say it's mundane morality or mundane ethics, but to promote vegetarianism also has its place. I mean, it's not the final solution.
Well, Prabhupada told Peter Burwash that his service would be to promote vegetarianism.
Who?
Peter Burwash.
Oh, okay.
Well, this whole verse and purport are about mundane necessities. You know, Prabhupada's bringing in the spiritual perspective that Krishna is the Almighty Father, that we are the elder brothers and we should take care of the animals. But this is all focused on material prosperity. That material prosperity naturally arises from spiritual leadership. And part of that material prosperity is that the animals are taken care of, that they're jolly. You know what? I was really debating on what to speak about from this purport because there's just so much here. But as far as the cows, there's one cow at the manor in London that had one calf maybe 16 years ago, and she's still producing milk. She produces more milk than any of the other cows. There's a cow in our farm in the Czech Republic who's never had a calf, and she's producing milk. And what's interesting about milk, you know, our brain is mostly made of fat, 60-70% fat. And the nature of the fat we eat determines the function of our brain. I was reading some interesting articles about using coconut oil as a cooking medium and how it nourishes the brain with various vitamins. But Prabhupada often talks about how it's the cow's fat, the fat in the milk, that we're particularly interested in. Of course, nowadays people drink skim milk, or they have taken the fat and homogenized it into the rest of the milk. And who knows what in the world that does to the nature of the fat. But the fat in the cow's milk provides all sorts of, not just vitamins and minerals, but various nutrients, like, you know, the omega, that provide for a good intelligence and health. And of course, nowadays people are, it's not unusual for people to die in their 50s and 60s of some kind of disease. So from every perspective, one should be taking care of the animals and the land. It's interesting that the ecology movement often doesn't focus on vegetarianism or taking care of the animals. So thank you very much for Jagdi Madhava Prabhu. No, they don't. Absolutely. You know, these are areas that we've really, I see that we have, that as a devotee society, we give some encouragement for brahmanas and some encouragement for shudras. We've started to encourage vaishyas, although we don't necessarily encourage vaishyas who produce honest natural wealth, and we definitely don't encourage kshatriyas. So this is, I see our big lack, and therefore we haven't really formed much of a society. But all these things should be done in an honest way. Yes. Yes, go ahead, please. Thank you very much. Well, I started becoming aware of this because I was asked to be the facilitator for GBC Committee on Devotee Care. First, I was just asked to do it for one day. Then they asked me to do it for 1 week, and now I seem to be there. And it kind of pushed me to think in another direction. I also started really thinking about this in speaking to the head of the devotee community in Hungary, Gaura Shakti Prabhu. And I started to realize that some of the most disaffected and critical members of the devotee community are most likely misengaged or unengaged kshatriyas, and that those kshatriyas who are doing their dharma are often having to do it outside of the association of devotees. They're just, somehow we don't see it as part of the society. We don't see it as Vaishnava. So we see, okay, if you're making a lot of money, you can still be a devotee if you're using that money for preaching and for projects and for building the society. We didn't used to think that way. You know, in the 1970s, we sure didn't think that way. But we think that way now. We've always understood that people who took care of cows and farmed were part of a devotee society, although we don't necessarily support those people in a practical way by buying their milk. And I think we've always, as I say, we've always understood the shudras were part of a devotee society. But the kshatriyas we put in the realm of social welfare workers. Yes. Yes, well, I've also spent a lot of time in Chaupati. In the Ukraine. Yes, yes.
Like that in our society and also the Gopiya society, things seem to revolve around a sannyasi or a charismatic leader that.
Well, they have to. You have to start with the brahmanas.
Well, more like guru. And so that seems to be a working model. And also, if you want to create Varnashram, I think they should start a farm project and try to create a microcosm of that on a farm.
I actually see this, you know, in my world travels. I've seen a number of models that are quite different from each other, and there's one in Bangladesh run by Devaki Devi Dasi. I see a lot of things going on at Bhaktivedanta Manor. Neither of those places have one strong central guru. Then the places that do have a strong central guru with this kind of thing is going on would be the Ukraine, Hungary, Chaupati, and the project Saving Richard Marsh is doing in New Zealand and Australia, particularly New Zealand. So I see both. I see that there's projects that have, you know, a really strong spiritual leader, but who's not acting as the kshatriya. You know, I've been to the management meetings in Chaupati, and Radhana Swami is not taking a role as a kshatriya at all. Not at all. Not even slightly in one percentage of one degree. It's not the role that he's taking. He's taking a role of giving wisdom and giving guidance and giving inspiration. So they all have to be there. If you have kshatriyas who don't have gurus, all kshatriyas need gurus. The Pandavas, Maharaj Yudhisthira had a guru. If you have kshatriyas without gurus, without brahmanas, then they're going to start putting morality and ethics as supreme instead of transcendence. And you are going to go to just mundane social welfare work. That's exactly where you're going to go. If you've got Vaishyas who don't have valid kshatriyas and brahmanas over them, if you have Vaishyas without gurus, then you're going to start going to just wealth. And pretty soon it's going to be wealth at any cost. And they're going to start exploiting. The kshatriyas are going to start exploiting the people, as Prabhupada said here, sending thousands of men into a hellish factory in war fields. You're going to have exploitation of the land and the animals, and then the Shudras, without proper Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Brahmanas, are going to start exploiting the crafts and the skills. They're going to start using entertainment for purposes of licentiousness and violence. The crafts are going to degrade into the factories. They're going to just get cash, which they spend on intoxication and prostitution. So all those things will... The lower side of the nature of all those are going to happen without brahmanas, without gurus. And there needs to be strong people at the top of the brahminical community as well. But I have seen things work at Bhaktivedanta Manor where there is more a community of brahmanas who lead the society rather than one strong central guru. And it's also quite an interesting model. One of the things we're doing in the devotee care committee is we're looking for as many different models as possible. We're also looking for places or programs that maybe have a part of the model. Maybe they have a guidance counseling system in place that really works. Maybe they have a system where the devotees can really grow spiritually in place. So we're also looking for complete models. I don't think anywhere yet is there a complete model, although perhaps Chaupati comes the closest. But we're also looking for models of parts of it. And we're looking for a variety of models because, frankly, what sometimes works in one culture can't just be transported. You know, Narendra Swami has not been able to just do a copy-paste with Chaupati into the Ukraine. He's had to make some adjustments. The same with Devamrita Swami, who's also taken on a lot of the factors of Chaupati into his programs in New Zealand. He's not just done a copy-paste. He's taken the principles and he's adapted them. And we as a devotee care committee have, what we're working on is manual. And we were told make a manual of best practices, and we decided that really what we wanted was a manual of best principles and best guidelines that people could then use to develop their own practices and their own systems. But not to think that a particular system would necessarily work in exactly the same way with people from different cultures, wouldn't necessarily work in the same way in the cities and in the country and so forth. I mean, even in Vedic society, there was definitely a different culture in Mathura than there was in Vrindavan. It was a different culture. It was part of the same culture, yet there was a different culture. There were different norms. So that also has to be taken into consideration. We do have somewhat different cultural, different cultural norms, different cultural principles. Just one example, which I hope you'll appreciate, is that I often run into people thinking that Indian women, for example, are more submissive to their husbands or more submissive in general than Western women. So I was in India years ago for Balaram's appearance day at one temple, and there were three or four women who went into the middle of the temple room and started yelling at everybody and directing everybody, go stand over here, go do this, everybody over here, go do that. And I thought, wow, in America, a woman would just not do that. Even most men wouldn't do that, what to speak of a woman. And I realized that what's culturally acceptable is different in different cultures. There are things that Western women will do that Indian women won't, and things that Indian women will do that Western women won't. And the system has to take that kind of thing into account. A system of devotee care and a system of governance has to be sensitive to those cultural differences. I mean, another cultural difference between the West and India, for example, is in India, bodily activities other than sexual ones can be very public. People can urinate and defecate on the side of the road. You drive on the road from Vrindavan to Govardhan at 6 in the morning, and the men are in one place and the women are in another place, but they're all just right at the side of the road passing stool and urine. And that would not be considered sufficient in the West. If you had a, they'll brush their teeth outside. If you had a Western devotee community and the leadership said, okay, care of the devotees is that everybody can do their toilet business on the side of the road, nobody would consider that you had taken care of their material necessities. So there are also different considerations by different cultures. Okay, I think we should go now. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.